Satanism and Communism by Richard Wurmbrand. Chapter 4, Too Late, A Housemaid's Revelation. An American commander, Sergius Reis, had been a disciple of Marx. Grieved by news of his death, he went to London to visit the house in which the admired teacher had lived. The family had moved. The only one whom he could find to interview was Marx's former housemaid, Helen DeMuth. She said these amazing words about him. He was a God-fearing man. When very sick, he prayed alone in his room before a row of lighted candles, tying a sort of tape measure around his forehead. This suggests phylacteries, implements worn by Orthodox Jews during their morning prayers. But Marx had been baptized in the Christian religion, had never practiced Judaism, and later became a fighter against God. He wrote books against religion and brought up all his children as atheists. What was this ceremony which an ignorant maid considered an occasion of prayer? Jews saying their prayers with phylacteries on their foreheads don't usually have a row of candles before them. Could this have been some kind of magic practice? We also know that Marx, a presumed atheist, had a bust of Zeus in his study. In Greek mythology, Zeus, a cruel heathen deity, transformed himself into a beast and took Europe captive, as did Marxism later. Coincidentally, the naked figure of Zeus, known for his ferocity, is the only religious emblem in the main lobby of the United Nations building in New York. Family letters. Another possible hint is contained in a letter written to Marx by his son Edgar on March 31, 1854. It begins with the startling words, "My dear devil, who has ever known of a son addressing his father like this? But that is how a Satanist writes to his beloved one." Could the son have been initiated as well? Equally significant, Marx's wife addresses him as follows in a letter of August 1844. "Your last pastoral letter, High Priest and Bishop of Souls, has again given quiet rest and peace to your poor sheep." Marx had expressed in the Communist Manifesto his desire to abolish all religion, which one might assume would include abolishing the Satanist cult too. Yet his wife refers to him as High Priest and Bishop of what religion? The only European religion with High Priest is the Satanist one. What pastoral letters did he, a man, believe to have been an atheist write? Where are they? This is a part of Marx's life which has remained unsearched. Biographers' testimonies. Some biographers of Marx have undoubtedly had a suspicion about the connection between devil worship and the subject of their book. But not having the necessary spiritual preparation, they could not understand the facts they had before their eyes. Still, their testimony is interesting. The Marxist Franz Mehring wrote in his book, Karl Marx, "Although Karl Marx's father died a few days before his son's 20th birthday, he seemed to have observed with secret apprehension the demon is his favorite son." Henry Marx did not think and could not have thought that the rich store of bourgeois culture which he handed on to his son Karl as valuable heritage for life would oily help to deliver the demons he feared. Would only help to deliver the demons he feared. Marx died in despair, as all Satanists do. On May 25, 1883, he wrote to Engels, "How pointless and empty is life, but how desirable." Marx was a contemporary of great Christians, the composer Mendelssohn, the philanthropist Dr. Barnardio, the preachers Charles Spurgeon and General William Booth, all lived near him in London, yet he never mentions them. They went unobserved. There is a secret behind Marx which few Marxists know about. Lenin wrote, "After half a century, not one of the Marxists has comprehended Marx." The secret behind Lenin's life, too. When I wrote the first edition of this present book, I knew of no personal involvement of Lenin with any rituals of the Satanist sect. Since then, I've read The Young Lenin by Trotsky, who was Lenin's intimate friend and co-worker. He writes that Lenin, at the age of 16, tore the cross from his neck, spat on it, and trotted underfoot, a very common Satanist ceremony. There is not the slightest doubt that Lenin was dominated by Satanist ideology. How else could one explain the following quotation from his letter to the Russian writer Maxim Gorky, dated 13-14 November 1913? Millions of sins, mischiefs, oppressions, and physical epidemics are more easily discovered by the people, and therefore less dangerous, than the thinnest idea of a spiritual little god, even if disguised in the most decorous garb. In the end, Satan deceived him, as he does all his followers. Lenin was moved to write as follows about the Soviet state. The state does not function as we desired. How does it function? The car does not obey. A man is at the wheel and seems to lead it, but the car does not drive in the desired direction. It moves as another force wishes. What is this other mysterious force which supersedes even the plans of the Bolshevik leaders? Did they sell out to a force which they hoped to master, but which proved more powerful than ever even they anticipated and drove them to despair? In a letter of 1921, Lenin wrote, "I hope we will be hanged on a stinking rope, and I did not lose the hope that this would happen because we cannot condemn dirty bureaucracy. If this happens, it will be well done." This was Lenin's last hope after a whole life of struggle for the communist cause, to be justly hanged on a stinking rope. This hope was not fulfilled for him, but almost all his co-workers were eventually executed by Stalin after confessing publicly that they had served other powers than the proletariat they pretended to help. What a confession from Lenin. "I hope we will be hanged on a stinking rope." It is interesting to note that at the age of 13, Lenin wrote what could be called prophetic poetry foretelling the bankruptcy in which his life would end. He had decided to serve mankind, but without God, and these were his words. "Sacrificing your life freely for others, it is a pity you will have the sad fate, that your sacrifice will be completely fruitless." What a contrast to the words of another fighter, St. Paul the Apostle, who wrote towards the end of his life, "I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day." 2 Timothy 4:7-8. There exists a too late in our spiritual affairs. Esau repented with many tears for having sold his birthright, but the deal could not be undone. And Lenin, founder of the Soviet state, said on his deathbed, "I committed a great error. My nightmare is to have the feeling that I'm lost in an ocean of blood from the innumerable victims. It is too late to return. To save our country, Russia, we would have needed men like Francis of Assisi. With 10 men like him, we could have saved Russia."